So the title of the talk is Forgiveness. Let the past be the past, and the present be new. And I think that we've experienced here, it's not so easy just because we use these phrases. They kind of invite angels and a few demons as well. More than one person in the groups has said, I have great problems in using my mother as the benefactor. And I can really understand, I think all of us can really understand, that it's all not so simple. Even a friend, we want to use a friend as a benefactor. And a relationship, even with a friend that we really respect and admire, never mind mother, is often complex, got many dimensions that are maybe difficult. And basically what the issue is that when our heart is open, it also gives room for the hurts and the scars, tzavakot, and the wounds that we've experienced in our life to arise. And they seem to be quite close to the surface and ready to jump up, even in the best, sweetest moments of open heart, up come the hurts from our biography or our experience. And we're kind of, there's something very strong going on, a tendency to make out of the hurt that we've received in our life, or the regret, or the guilt, or the pain, or the shame. There's something in us very strong that tends to make these things an icon. You know what I mean, icon? To turn it into something really solid. And to turn us very easily into a victim. And we all know about that in the Jewish people. We're professionals at that. Bali miktor at being victims. And it seems like that we keep running around our hurt like a moth. Ash, like a moth around a flame. And to look at it a little bit in terms of Buddhist psychology, the self, the building of a self is built through a great deal of attachment. And the attachment is very often to what is difficult for us. The self wants to know what's difficult in order to prevent, in order to reduce it, in order to be comfortable, and in order to survive. The self. Not so much the body. Body's okay. No, worry about the body. The self is the problem, not the body. And the self is busy looking around. What is next that might hurt me? Where do I have to watch? Where do I have to be careful? What are the messages I'm getting? Where's the next threat? How will I know that I'll be safe tomorrow? And, of course, very busy with the hurt of the past. And the Buddha said, a very classic quote, hate is not reduced by hate, but only by love. Love is the only thing that will reduce the hate and the anger. And he said, if you hold a narrative. He robbed me. He hurt me. He hit me, or she. She hit me. She hurt me. She wounded me. If you hold on to that, that is not, that makes sure that the hate or the anger carries on and keeps rolling through our life. We just can't go there. We have to drop it. And sometimes we know that these things can be so strong that they can actually ruin our life. And more than once, I've met in my own life and in retreats, people have been wounded in relationships, for example, in love relationships, and they're still with it 20 years later, and reducing the joy of life. And we forget that hurt comes from conditions. A bunch of conditions come together and hurt us. Can be another person, can be our mother, can be our neighbor, can be our friend. But just conditions, a word, a look in the eye, maybe a stick. But still, conditions, and the nature of conditions is that they arise and they pass. Every condition has a sell-by date. Pak toke. It passes. Every word is gone after one moment. So conditions come and go. But we, namely the self, because we're so busy looking what's going to hurt me next, we hang on to the conditions that give us that hurt us, and we hold on to them. But that means that the holding is a very active process. The holding on needs us to forget that conditions come and go, and to be really active in catching what hurts us, or what we feel wounds us, or what is threatening to us, and holding it on really actively, and be busy with it. So it's we that maintain the hurt, not the world. There's a Tibetan story which is nice about two people in a market, and one got hit by a stick. There's a crowd of people, and a stick hit this one Tibetan. And he started to shout at the stick, "Why you hit me?" And his friend said, "Don't you think it's a bit unnecessary to shout at the stick? Maybe you shout at the hand holding the stick." So the friend said, okay, sure. So he started to shout, "Hand, why you hit me? Why you hit me with the stick?" And his friend said, "Well, maybe you should shout at the arm that holds the hand, because it's not the hand, it's the arm." So, okay, I'll do that. He started to shout at the arm. The friend said, "Well, maybe you should shout at the person whose arm it is, whose hand it is, who's hitting you with a stick." He said, "Yes, of course, you're right." So he started to shout at the person. And then his friend said, "Well, you know, maybe you could shout at the kind of the conditions that made this person hit you with a stick. Maybe he didn't have breakfast this morning. Maybe he had a hard time. Maybe he was irritable for some reason. They're the conditions. Maybe you should shout at the conditions, not the person, because the conditions made him hit you with a stick." His friend said, "Yeah, okay. Wait a minute. But the conditions are the entire world. So I've got to shout at the whole world." Yes, basically. If you want to shout, you have to shout at the whole universe. So instead of that, we regard the hurt. We need to regard the hurt we've received as an opportunity for practice, and not as an opportunity to hold on and hang on to it. And the practice is the practice of freedom, and the practice is the practice of expanding and not contracting. Marchiv v'lo mitkavetz mesaviv ha-ke'ev o ha-tzalakot. And it's important to understand, and very often we don't understand this, it's very easy to see, people don't understand this, but when we want to act in the world, we need freedom in order to act wisely. And exactly in the quote of the Buddha, if we are acting from hurt, from guilt, from wounds and from scars, and from being a victim, even though it's easy to see why people say, well, that's the only reason I have to act, is to hit back, or to, only if I'm guilty that I've done something will I go and repair it. Therefore, I need my guilt in order to go and repair damage. Or, because of the hurt, I can go up, I have motivation to go and do something. And actually, it's simply not true. The wise action, the basis for wise action in the world is not guilt, is not being a victim, is not holding on to pain, but is acting from the heart, which is free. A free heart. And I remember one very moving meeting in, we had many years of dialogue work with Israelis and Palestinians, and we used to bring groups of Israelis to meet with Palestinians in the town of Shechem, Nablus. And at one time, one young Israeli guy was saying how guilty he felt on behalf of the administration that was making the Palestinians suffer so much in their daily life. And how guilty he felt, and he talked a lot about his guilt. And one Palestinian, a young guy, said, look, we don't want your guilt, because your guilt just makes you stay at home and feel guilty. We need free people who will come and help us. And it's a very powerful statement. So, in some way or other, we need a movement of cleaning the past, of letting go of the past. And this is a big story. It's a lot more than letting go of the hurt. It's letting go of the past, of the control of the past on the present. We need to have a mechanism in us that does a kind of, that presses a reset button. Like a reset on the computer. Restart. And we need to have it reset in us. That is all the time resetting the present. Renewing the present. Refreshing the present. So the present is clean and fresh and new. This doesn't mean forgetting, because the memory has a function. But it's fine. We all have a memory. If we didn't have a memory, we'd be in Alzheimer condition, not very pleasant. Memory is fine. So we don't need to forget. We don't need to forget that we've been hurt, even. It's all right. But we do need to free ourselves from the control that this memory controls us in the present. I remember 2 years running, not this year, but year before, and the year before that, I was teaching a retreat on the Holocaust with a group of Israelis and Germans. And the first retreat was in Berlin. And quite a few people came from the Sangha here in Israel and joined the retreat in Berlin. And then the second retreat was in Kiel with a whole group of Germans coming from Germany to join us. And we worked quite intensively on the control of the narrative of the Holocaust as something that steals our freedom. And the way it reduced the joy of life in the present in two completely different ways. The Israelis with a narrative of victim, and the Germans with a narrative of perpetrator. Somewhere in my past, my grandfather, my people, my this, we did this. And the Israeli, somewhere in my past, my this, it was done to us. This story taking shape, becoming solid, turning the Israelis into victims and the Germans into shame. Somewhere deep down, shame and silence and confusion. And both carrying and both wanting to be free. And the meeting together was a beautiful meeting of not dropping anything. We went to a concentration camp in Berlin. We just had a silent walk, Germans and Israelis together. We walked silently and spent a whole day in silence in a concentration camp. We weren't there to forget anything, but we were there to clean the pressure of the narrative and the way it creates a kind of a self which puts us in prison and makes unwise and steals the joy of life, steals our freedom, steals our action, the freedom of action. It's like pressure on us. So forgiveness is part of this cleaning of the past. It's forgiveness and letting go are very similar. Forgiveness is a little more active and it's a bit more constructed. Letting go is something we do every moment, especially in our practice. And forgiveness is a little bit more formed, but it's very similar. It's a healing. It releases the life force in us. It releases the life force. I remember talking a lot about this in relation to cancer patients. And I've done a lot of work in this field in my past. And groups of cancer, people suffering from cancer, will be getting together. And I heard from a lady that was years and years and years working with groups of cancer patients, and she said very often when the group reached a place of deep forgiveness, something shifted and a life force was liberated in people, and often this led to a kind of a healing. That the forgiveness was undoing blocks which were sitting in the body and partly maybe maintaining the cancer. That forgiveness, very deep release of life force, of healing. There is a very famous Buddhist story about this, which I want to tell you. It's a story of Angulimala. And those of you who've been around in the Buddhist community know this story very well. And Angulimala means 1,000 fingers. And he was a young guy that really believed in his guru. And his guru was hurt. Sounds to be a really, really bad guru. A real disappointment. His guru was hurt, and he told Angulimala, you have to go to the forest and kill 1,000 people. and hang their fingers as a necklace around your neck. Cut off fingers and hang them, make a necklace. And that's Angulimala. The mala is a necklace of fingers. Anyway, so he did. He went to the forest and he killed people. And then one day the Buddha came and heard about this and said to his monks, I want to go and see this man. He's suffering, and also I know that his mother is on the way, and I don't want him to kill his mother. And he's killed 999 people. He needs to kill one more. And it would probably be his mother unless I go there. So the Buddha went there, and all the monks said, you can't go alone, he'll kill you. We need you. Stop. And the Buddha said, no, I'm going, I'll be all right, don't worry, stay meditating, I'll be fine. So he went to the forest. And soon Angulimala appeared. And the Buddha was walking, and Angulimala said, stop, stop! And the Buddha kept walking. And Angulimala started to chase him and couldn't catch him, but he was just walking. And Angulimala said, stop, stop! And the Buddha kept walking. And he couldn't catch the Buddha. And the third time, stop, stop! And the Buddha turned round to him and said, beautiful phrase, I stopped a long time ago. Now you stop. Stop killing, stop damage, stop doing what you're doing, just stop. And this was such a shock. And by the way, if you're thinking about how to act in the world in a different way when faced with violence, with conflict, with patterns, just think about this story, how the Buddha found such a wise way of breaking the pattern and coming up with something totally new and non-violent and stopping the violence. So Angulimala said, well, I've never seen, he was stopped by the originality, by the newness, by something different that the Buddha said. He said, I've never seen anyone like you. People either run away and I kill them, or they beg for mercy and I kill them, or they fight me and I kill them. And you did none of those. Who are you? And the Buddha said, let's sit down under this tree and I'll tell you. And of course, he became a monk, Angulimala. And he became not only a monk, but a totally liberated person. And this, by the way, is encouragement for all of us. Because it wasn't as if all the killing he did stopped him becoming enlightened. It didn't. It didn't stop him. So there's something very dynamic about reality, that really things can be wiped from the past and renewed into the present. So the Buddha said, so that he was enlightened, he became an arhant, Angulimala, and one day he got a message that a woman was dying in childbirth. And so he wanted to help her. And he went to the Buddha and said, I want to help this woman who's dying in childbirth. How do I do this? And the Buddha said to him, tell her that you've never hurt anyone in your life. He said, what? You want me to break right speech? You want me to say a lie? So the Buddha said to him, okay, don't say that, but say that from the moment you became a monk, you never hurt anybody. And he did that, and the woman was saved, survived. And the way I understand this story, there's one more part that is I want to mention, that when Angulimala would go through the villages on with his bowl for food, the villagers would often throw stones, would shout at him, and would hit him with sticks. And he went to the Buddha, and the Buddha said, "Bear it, bear it. You just have to put up with that. There's nothing we can do about that. The karma is still there. It has to be worked through." So there is a lesson here about karma, which is that karma is not a fixed, controlling, solid thing where we do something and then it's written in stone and we'll suffer it all our life. That everything can be changed. That thing, if we're really serious about cleaning the past, it's possible. That we can clean our karma, our goral. Our goral is dynamic. We can clean it. We can clean the present. We can clean the past. That's Angulimala's story. It's everything is possible. Sab kuch milega. Everything is possible. And it's a real encouragement for us that the past doesn't need to put us in prison. That if we choose to renew, to refresh, to clean the past, we can do it. And then it doesn't control us. What it does, cleaning, forgiving, letting go of the past, what it does is changing the stream of consciousness in us. The stories we tell ourselves become different. And because those stories become different, our life is different. And because our life is different, our karma is different. So it's the narratives, the stories that we tell ourselves that go running through the mind, that's the place where we see our freedom, our letting go, our not being controlled by hurt and pain. So forgiveness can be practiced. And it's important in some way to practice it. I remember, I don't know why it happened, but one day I was walking in the street, actually it's not so long ago, I don't know when it was, and I suddenly felt that I wanted to ask the earth for forgiveness as I walked. And I just spent most of the day asking the earth for forgiveness for all the damage that me personally, this body is doing to the earth, from using resources, from global warming, from eating things, from just using just my life. I can't avoid it, and we can't avoid. It's illusion to think that we can be free of damage. We do damage all the time. Just by our existence, we do damage. We can't avoid it. Every time we use a car, every time we use water, every time we build a building so the animals can't live there anymore, every time just by living, we are making damage. And we can't avoid that, but we can be aware of it. And there is a need for forgiveness, for example, very basically for us. So it needs one or two things for the practice of forgiveness. Firstly, we need to be calm and present. We need to be aware. And secondly, we can only practice forgiveness with something that arises. We can't practice forgiveness in abstract, with just empty words. It has to be in relation to something. Someone did something to us, against us. We did something against somebody else. We hurt something. But even rather abstract, like the planet, we hurt the planet, but still it has to be something that we experience. And then the forgiveness has power. It's an interesting, I discussed this with my wife, who's very engaged in the Zohar. It's her life. She works with it, she reads it, she teaches it a bit. And I talked to her about the word tikkun, the Hebrew word tikkun, which takes a certain power in Jewish life and Jewish mysticism. And in the sources, the more deep sources, tikkun is seeing. Tikkun is not repairing or fixing, is actually seeing, to see freely. In other words, to let go of the past is tikkun. And Rachel, my wife, was saying, actually what it is hatkana, namely to reset, hatkana, to put a new program. So, you know, your operating system doesn't work, so you put another program. And that's the kind of thing we're talking about, to reprogram our life so that it's renewed, the renewal, the freshness of the moment that is not held, weighted by the weight of the past and the weight of hurt of the past. So, basically, forgiveness is about letting go, it's about being calm and present, it's about seeing something that we do feel we need to forgive, and we need to let go of. We need to be aware that the fundamental truth, that everything is dynamic and goes by itself. So all we're doing is actually aligning, machaven. We align ourselves with the truth that everything is made of conditions, so it passes anyway. It's not as if we have to fight against something solid. We have to see that things are not solid and everything is dynamic. And so our letting go and our forgiveness is part of a truth. It's held by truth. It's not held by something artificial, malachuti. So we can, and it needs a clear intention. It needs clear intention. And we can use phrases and words also for forgiveness. And so I would like to do this together. We will practice it now, after this talk. But I would say, just a small reminder, that especially with forgiveness, we can say the phrases, but then also it's good to return to the calm awareness, watch the ripples, that we throw a stone in the water and watch the ripples. We bring the phrases into our consciousness. Watch what happens after. So take a space and watch the heart and watch what it does to our narrative, our story in the mind. Watch what happens to that when we say these phrases and when we feel them. Okay, so that's the talk, and let's practice. So maybe we all find a sitting posture that's right and gives intention, renews our intention. So just allowing ourselves to be aware, be quietly present, opening the mind, opening the heart. Calm and settled and steady. And maybe then we can just bring to mind a situation in which we may have harmed somebody else. And it can be anything. We may have said something unwise. We may have hurt somebody else, hurt their feelings. We may have wounded somebody. We may have hurt the planet. We may have hurt animals. Just bring to mind an example where it feels like we hurt somebody or something or someone. And feel in our heart the deep, deep intention and wish to clean that, to let it go, not to let it hang into the present. And I'm going to say the phrases that you could use, I'll say them in English and in Hebrew. And you can just say them to yourself if you like. Just feel the energy of the phrases and what they do. If I have hurt or harmed you knowingly or unknowingly, whether I know it or I don't know it, I ask your forgiveness. If I have hurt or harmed you, whether I know it or I don't know it, knew it or didn't know it, I ask your forgiveness. Im ichavti lcha lach, o pagati bach bcha, biyodiin o shelo biyodiin yodain, אני מבקשת את סליחתך וסליחתך. If I have hurt or harmed you, whether I knew it or I didn't know it, I ask your forgiveness. Say it one more time. If I have hurt or harmed you, knowingly or without knowing, I ask your forgiveness. Im chavti lecha lach, o pegati lecha pach, v'yodein o shelo v'yodein, ani mevakesh et slichatcha, slichatech. Now let's move to a situation where we feel we've been hurt. Someone has hurt us. Someone has wounded us with unwise or violent or thoughtless or cruel or aggressive actions or words. Just have the intention to clean that, to let it go, to forgive. If you have hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. אם את, אתה, הכאבתי לי, או פגעת בי, ביודעין או שלא ביודעין, אני סולח או סולחת, סולחת לך. If you have hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. if you have hurt or harmed me, whether you knew it or you didn't know it, I forgive you. And the third part of this ritual relates just to ourselves, because we can't avoid on many occasions hurting and harming ourselves. It just happens whether we know it or we don't know it. And so we need to give the same gift of forgiveness to ourselves. Ability to start fresh and let go of the hurts that we have given to ourselves. For all the ways I have hurt or harmed myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I offer forgiveness. For all the ways I might have hurt myself, whether I knew it or I didn't know it, I offer forgiveness to myself. Al kol otam hamikrim, bahem hechavti, that's me, or pagati, that's me, v'yodin or shelo v'yodin, ani matzia slicha. Not at the moment, no. I want to say two things. first that this ritual of asking forgiveness and offering forgiveness to self, to others, is quite classic, and there are many, many Buddhist practitioners and monks that from childhood they do it every day. Every single day. They do not have one day without the ritual of asking for forgiveness. And I want you to put it in the perspective of cleaning the past, of cleaning the weight of the past on us. And therefore, it's actually something joyful. It releases joy. It releases life. So although, you know, obviously there's pain in it, but it's fundamentally letting go of pain and not holding on to pain. Holding on to pain is far, far more difficult for us and painful. Letting go of pain creates lightness and freedom. So it's basically an invitation to joy. Just a small reminder, it's not continuing with the problem. It's melting the problem. It's letting it drop. And feeling freedom and joy and empowerment in the present moment. So I suggest you just take this time outside, walking, and just with an intention for forgiveness. And take the half an hour to walk outside under the full moon. It's a beautiful moon out there. And just experience the sense of relief, release of forgiveness, of asking and receiving, giving it to ourselves and giving it to the world, what I've done that I might have harmed others and what others might have done to harm me, letting it all go under the moon as we walk. Okay? And we need a good half an hour, so maybe the bell ringer should ring in half an hour. I think we should take a little extra time. Now, thank you.